to Ezekiel and said, "Moreover, thou son of man, take thee one stick and write upon it for Judah and for the children of Israel, his companion. Then take another stick and write upon it for Joseph, the stick of Ephraim, and for all the house of Israel, his companion. And join them one to another into one stick, and they shall become one in thine hand."
Welcome to Double Portion Inheritance with Maria Merola, brought to you by DoublePortionInheritance.com. Now, Maria Merola.
Good evening, Mishpokah, friends, family, and Messiah. Tonight is March 27th, 2014, and the title of my message is, Did Messiah Eat the Passover? You see, every year this controversial topic comes up, and there are prominent ministries out there teaching that our Messiah, Yahushua, did not eat the Passover meal with his disciples. And this is in complete contradiction to the New Testament scriptures or the Brit Hadashah. To teach that he did not eat the Passover is to completely discredit the New Testament scriptures. In Hebrew, we call it the Brit Hadashah. Well, I'm here to debunk some of these myths that have been taught by prominent ministries. You see, for the past 2,000 years, there's been an age-old controversy within the community of believers whereby some have surmised that our Messiah did not actually eat a Passover meal with his disciples. They say that he merely ate the Last Supper, and they rationalize that this could not have been a true Passover meal because they assume that the Passover lambs had not been slaughtered yet the night before he died. But did you know that there is no such thing in the scriptures as a Last Supper? That's right. Not one mention of the word Last Supper exists in the Bible. Many have wondered how our Messiah could have eaten the Passover meal the night before he died, and yet he also became the Passover the following evening. Well, there is a very simple explanation for this. You see, the Torah says that in English we read it at evening, but in Hebrew it is ben ha'areb, which means between the two evenings. Let me read it to you. It's in Shemot or Exodus 12:18. It says, "In the first month, on the 14th day of the month, at evening, you shall eat unleavened bread until the 1 20th day of the month at evening." In Vayikra or Leviticus 23:5, it says, "In the 14th day of the first month at evening is Yahuwah's Passover." And then Bemidbar or Numbers 9:3, it says, "In the 14th day of this month at evening, you shall keep it in his appointed season, according to all the rites of it, and according to all the ceremonies thereof, you shall keep it." Now, as we can see by these verses that I just read, in English, it would appear to some that this would have been at the tail end of the 14th of Abib. In other words, 3 hours before sundown, when the date would change to the 15th of Abib. For those of you who maybe are new to biblical timekeeping, I want you to understand that Pope Gregory in the 1500s and 1582 changed the calendar so that the date changes at midnight. But according to biblical reckoning, the calendar date changes at sundown. As soon as the sun goes down, the date changes. Prior to Pope Gregory making these changes in the 1500s, the calendar date always changed at sundown. And so, understand that when our Creator Yahuwah commands us to kill the Passover at evening, we're reading this in English, but in Hebrew it says between the two evenings. In other words, between the two evenings of the 14th day of the first Hebrew month called Abib, or in modern Hebrew, it's Nisan. Now, before I go on with this teaching, I want to let you know that if you are interested in receiving this teaching that I'm discussing tonight, just go to my website, doubleportioninheritance.com, and under the store tab, you will see ebooks. You can download ebooks at my store tab. And if you would like the flash drive that I offer a flash drive with 60 ebooks on it. For a minimum donation of $60 to this ministry, I will send you the flash drive. Just write to me at doubleportioninheritance@gmail.com. And in the subject line, write flash drive, and I will send that flash drive to you for a minimum donation of $60 to this ministry. There are 60 ebooks on the flash drive, to include the one I'm doing tonight called Messiah Ate the Passover the Night Before He Died. Okay, now let's take a look at this verse in Shemot, or Exodus 12:6, as it reads in Hebrew. It says, "And you shall keep it, the lamb, up until the 14th day of the same month, and the whole assembly of the congregation of Israel shall kill it in the evening." Now, the phrase "in the evening" in Hebrew reads ben ha'areb, which literally means between the two evenings. Also note that they were to keep the lamb up until the 14th day of Abib. This means that the moment that the sun went down on the 13th of Abib, they were to kill it between the two evenings on the 14th day of Abib. You see, the word in this verse is number 996. It's the Hebrew word ben, between, in the midst of. The word evening is number 6153, Ereb, which means evening, night, sunset, dusk. But this word Ereb comes from another root word. It's number 6150, Arab. Arab means through the idea of covering with a texture, to grow dusky at sundown, to be darkened toward evening. And so that's the root word for Arab. And it also has another root word, Arab, number 6148. It means to intermix. It means to mingle. So what this is telling us is that the word evening comes from the root word that means to mingle or intermix. When the light mixes with the darkness, then it becomes dusk. And that is precisely what the word evening means. You see, evening does not mean night. Night is when there is no light left at all. And so between the two evenings, which means there would be two periods of dusk within a 24-hour period on the 14th day of the first Hebrew month of Abib, the commandment to kill the Passover lamb would be between two evenings or two periods of dusk or sundown. And so this would then imply that any time within that 24-hour period, a lamb could be slaughtered. Some scholars believe that this phrase "between the evenings" is referring to a Hebrew idiom that describes the period from 12 noon until sundown as the last 6 hours of the day. And this is what they believe that this phrase means. But we have the precedence in Scripture which illustrates that Passover is the same as Yom Kippur, which is from evening to evening. You see, in Vayikra, or Leviticus 23, starting with verse 27 through 32, we read that the Yom Kippur, or Day of Atonement, is to begin on the ninth day of the seventh month at evening. So let's read it. Leviticus 23:27. "Also on the tenth day of this seventh month, there shall be a Day of Atonement, Yom Kippur. It shall be a holy convocation unto you, and you shall afflict your souls and offer an offering made by fire unto Yahuwah. And you shall do no work in that same day, for it is a Day of Atonement." In other words, Yom Kippur. "To make an atonement for you before Yahuwah your Elohim. For whatsoever soul it be that shall not be afflicted in that same day, he shall be cut off from among his people. And whatsoever soul it be that does any work in that same day, the same soul will I destroy from among his people. You shall do no manner of work. It shall be a statute forever throughout your generations in all your dwellings. It shall be unto you a Sabbath of rest. You shall afflict your souls in the ninth day of the month at evening. From evening unto evening shall you celebrate your Sabbath. Okay, did you observe this? Yom Kippur runs its course from evening to evening. And Passover is the same. It runs its course from evening to evening or between the two evenings. You're not going to be able to see this over the radio audio recording, but when you get my teaching and download it, you'll be able to see a graphic that I've provided. On the graphic, it shows from the Brown's Driver-Briggs lexicon. It says that the Pharisees, the Samaritans, and the Karaites had different opinions as to when the evening would be rendered. And so I believe Yahuwah purposely designed it that way so that our Messiah would fulfill the Torah by eating the Passover with the house of Yehuda or Judah the night before he was betrayed by them. And then the following evening, just before the 15th of Abib, he also became the Passover for those outside of the covenant. You see, when he ate it the night before, the house of Judah was still in covenant relationship with Yahuwah. But by the following evening, the house of Judah as a whole, on a national level, they would then betray him publicly. They shouted, "Crucify him." At that point, he was escorted outside of the city limits of Jerusalem to the place of execution for those who were outside of the covenant. In other words, the 10 northern tribes of Israel, known as the House of Ephraim, or Ephraim, and also the 2 southern tribes of Judah and Benjamin who had just earlier that morning betrayed him when they shouted, "Crucify him." You see, in Numbers 19, it says that whenever the altar in the temple became defiled, a spotless red heifer had to be escorted outside of the city limits of Jerusalem, where he would be killed and his body would be consumed. His ashes would then be used to cleanse the altar, to sanctify and cleanse it from all defilement. Our Messiah not only fulfilled the Passover lamb for both houses of Israel, but he also became the red heifer sacrifice because they had defiled his altar when they shed his innocent blood. This is the reason why there had to be 2 evenings for slaughtering lambs for both houses of Israel. Now, after I had done much research into this, I discovered that in the days when our Messiah was sacrificed on the tree, the house of Judah did a personal Passover for each individual family at the beginning of the 14th of Abib. And then the following evening, just before the 15th of Abib, they did one for the entire community at the temple. Now, this only makes sense because the house of Judah had not left the covenant yet when he ate it with them. You see, Judas had not betrayed him yet, and the house of Judah had not shouted, "Crucify him," just yet. You see, Judas is the Greek rendering, but his real name is Judah or Yehuda, and he's named after the tribe of Yehuda. So Judas or Yehuda, he symbolizes the house of Judah. He symbolizes the entire house. And so the main reason why this has become an issue for me is because there are some people who use this controversy to try and discredit the Brit Hadashah, or the New Testament scriptures. These same people argue that there are mistakes in the New Testament or the Brit Hadashah. Now, while it is true that there are some minor translation errors in the New Testament, the assertion that the translators purposely inserted the idea of our Messiah eating the Passover in all 3 Gospels is absurd. Once people begin to attack the Brit Hadashah or the New Testament, that leads to a very slippery slope. Before you know it, people begin to deny the validity of the New Testament scriptures entirely, and that also leads them to denying Yahushua as their Messiah. Another disturbing conclusion that this often leads to is the denial that our Messiah had to fulfill the Torah 100% in order to be the perfect sinless lamb. You see, if he had not eaten the Passover lamb on the 14th day of Abib, as commanded, then he would have been in violation of the commandment, and that would have rendered his sacrifice as defiled. You see, he had to obey every aspect of the Torah, and that means he had to eat the Passover. But the same people who argue that he did not eat the Passover with his disciples also assume that he ate leavened bread, which goes against the Torah commandment to eat unleavened bread with the Passover lamb and bitter herbs. We read that in Exodus 12:8. Now, there has never been a doubt in my mind that our Messiah ate the true Passover meal. But there has been so much argument about this recently that I decided to do a study on the matter in hopes that I might bring unity back to the body of Messiah and thereby show weightier evidence that our Messiah not only obeyed the Torah by eating the Passover, but he was also the Passover lamb that same year. You see, our Creator Yahuwah has already placed in the Torah the parameters whereby our Messiah would not be in conflict with the Torah in doing both, in eating the Passover and also becoming the Passover. And so in this study, we find out that our Messiah did not violate the Mosaic Law or the Torah, as some have suggested, for he was able to actually eat the Passover and thereby become the perfect, spotless, sinless lamb the very next day when he actually became the Passover. So why is this issue so important? Well, because the very insinuation that he did not eat the Passover in the year that he died casts a shadow of doubt that he was the genuine Messiah of Israel. In order for him to be perfect, he had to eat the Passover. He could not be perfect. He could not have been the perfect sacrifice unless he himself obeyed the Torah by eating the Passover. Another serious issue that is raised in this argument is the validity of the New Testament scriptures we call the Brit Hadashah. Those who argue that our Messiah did not eat the Passover insist that there are major errors in the New Testament scriptures and therefore they cannot be trusted. Beloved, once we begin down that road, then one begins to doubt if the New Testament scriptures are even telling us the truth concerning our Messiah's death, burial, and resurrection. Any minor translation errors are very easy to detect by simply looking up the original words in Greek and or Aramaic, and also looking up the meaning of these words in the Strong's Concordance or a lexicon. Also, the King James Version helps us out by showing when certain words were not in the text by the use of italics. All you have to do is look for the words in italics in the King James Version, and we can easily find out if there are translation problems. Consequently, there are not blatant or major translation errors in the Textus Receptus or the received text. You see, all of our New Testament Bibles come from either one of two texts. Either it comes from the Textus Receptus, or what is called the received text, or it comes from the Revised Greek, which the Revised Greek has been dramatically altered by the Gnostics and the New Age occultists. So you cannot trust any New Testament manuscript that comes from the Revised Greek. This is why I am a huge proponent of the King James Version. Okay, so there are not blatant or major translation errors in the Textus Receptus or the received text. And the New Testament manuscripts that were preserved in Antioch, Syria by the first century believers, this is exactly what King James used. He sent 50 Hebrew scribes to find these manuscripts in Antioch back in the 1600s, and this is what they used to translate the Brit Hadashah, or the New Covenant writings. Those who purport that Messiah did not eat the Passover meal are using corrupted Bible translations such as the Vaticanus Codex from the Vatican vaults. The Gnostics in Alexandria, Egypt, who did not believe in Messiah's deity, removed many verses from the original manuscripts in the second century, and thus they created a corrupted text which was later used by Constantine for the Latin Vulgate Bible of Roman Catholicism. Their Therefore, when trying to solve this issue, the only manuscripts that I would trust is the Textus Receptus used by the King James translators and the Aramaic Peshitta. Now, to understand the hidden agenda of the Gnostics and their decision to alter the scriptures, you must look at my other article entitled King James Version versus Modern Translations. And by the way, that article is included in the flash drive that I offer. Now, there is actually real evidence that Messiah, Yahushua, ate the real Passover lamb with unleavened bread. This was not merely a Last Supper. There's no such thing as a Last Supper in the Bible. So when people throw out that term Last Supper, it is totally fabricated. This was not a Last Supper, and it was not a precursor to the real Passover meal. There is not one place in the entire Bible where the term Last Supper is ever used. This was by no means his last meal with his disciples, for only days later he would resurrect and he would meet them on the road to Emmaus, and that day he would eat fish and honeycomb with them, as we read in Luke 24:24-42. So this was by no means his last supper with them. Now, here is conclusive evidence that Messiah ate the real Passover. Our study begins with the gospel account of Mark, where our Messiah's own words will be highlighted in bright red. If you read the article, you'll see that I highlighted these in bright red and I emboldened them. The gospel of Mark. Let's read it. Mark 14:12. Now I'm reading it from the King James Version, but I have updated the archaic language. Okay. And the first day of unleavened bread, when they killed the Passover, his disciples said unto him, "Where will you that we go and prepare that you may eat the Passover?" Okay, now, something I want to point out. The word day in this passage is italicized. So the word day was not there. So we could read it as if it says, "And the first of unleavened bread, when they killed the Passover, his disciples said unto him, where will you that we go and prepare that you may eat the Passover?" Okay. Now, the next verse, Mark 14:13, it says, "And he sends forth two of his disciples and says unto them, go you into the city, and there shall meet you a man bearing a pitcher of water. Follow him." Next verse, Mark 14:14. "And wheresoever he shall go in, say you to the good men of the house, the master says, where is the guest chamber where I shall eat the Passover with my disciples?" Mark 14:15. "And he will show you a large upper room furnished and prepared. There make ready for us." Mark 14:16. "And his disciples went forth and came into the city and found as he had said unto them, and they made ready the Passover. And in the evening he came with the 12." That's Mark 14:17. Now Mark 14:18. "And as they sat and did eat, Yahushua said, verily I say unto you, one of you which eats with me shall betray me." Okay, now you will notice that verse 16 says they made ready the Passover. Verse 18 says they ate. Messiah himself said, "One of you which eats with me," indicating that he was eating. Not just them, he was also eating. He says, "One of you which eats with me." What did they eat? They ate what they had prepared in verse 16, which was what? The Passover. And what was it that they had prepared? The Passover. That means that they actually killed a lamb, roasted it, and ate it on the night of the 14th of Abib with unleavened bread, not leavened bread. Some people argue that the Passover meal that he ate only consisted of bread and wine, and there was no lamb involved. But what exactly does the word Passover mean? If our Messiah actually ate the Passover with his disciple, how does one eat a Passover? Let's see what the Greek Strong's Concordance shows us for this word Passover. It's number 3957, in the Greek Strong's Concordance, it's Pascha. Pascha, it says, of Aramaic origin, the Paschal sacrifice, which was accustomed to be offered for the people's deliverance of old from Egypt. The Paschal lamb, the lamb the Israelites were accustomed to slay and eat on the 14th day of the month of Nisan, the first month of their year, in memory of the day on which their fathers, preparing to depart from Egypt, were bidden by Elohim to slay and eat a lamb, and to sprinkle their doorposts with its blood, that the destroying angel, seeing the blood, might pass over their dwellings. Messiah crucified is likened to the slain Paschal lamb, the Paschal supper, the Paschal feast, the feast of the Passover, extending from the 14th to the 20th day of the month Nisan. Now that is precisely what it says in the Greek Strong's Concordance for the word Passover. It's Pascha. Okay, now let's see what the Aramaic Peshitta says. Now, there's ample historical evidence that the New Testament scriptures were first written down in Aramaic before being translated into Greek. Now, Andrew Gabriel Roth published the Aramaic English New Testament, and I show below what the Besorah, or the Gospels, say regarding our Messiah eating the Passover. The Aramaic translation for the word Passover is Pascha. Okay, so let's read it from the Aramaic English New Testament. Matityahu, or Matthew 26:17, says, "Now on the first day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread, the disciples drew near to Yeshua and said to him, 'Where do you want us to prepare for you to eat the Pascha?'" All right, now in Mark 14:12, in the Aramaic English New Testament, it says, "And in the first day of the unleavened bread, in which the Yehudians slay the Pascha, his disciples were saying to him, 'Where do you desire for us to go and prepare the Pascha to eat?'" And now finally in Luke 22:8, in the Aramaic English New Testament, it says, "And Yeshua sent Kepha and Yochanan and said to them, 'Go, prepare the Pascha for us that we may eat.'" Okay, so how do we know that Messiah actually ate unleavened bread? We are going to uncover this puzzle by first removing the additional words that were not in the original text of the New Testament. The verse below that I'm about to read from Matthew 26:17 has italicized words highlighted in red, which I've highlighted in the article in red, and I place them in brackets to indicate that these words were added by the English translators. So let me read it to you from the King James Version. Matityahu, or Matthew 26:17, says, "Now the first day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread, the disciples came to Yehoshua, saying unto him, 'Where will you that we prepare for you to eat the Passover?'" Now, the term day is italicized, and the phrase, "the feast of." The phrase, "the feast of," was added by the translators. It's in italics. So let's read it without the italicized words. Matthew 26:17 says, "Now the first of unleavened bread, the disciples came to Yehoshua, saying unto him, 'Where will you that we prepare for you to eat the Passover?'" Now you're going to notice that if this was the first of unleavened bread, and he had not died yet, this means that it was the beginning of the 14th day of Abib, just after sundown on the 13th of Abib, and they were already calling this the first of unleavened bread. See, the Greek word used for unleavened in this passage is number 106 in the Greek Strong's Concordance. It's azimos, azimos, it's really azumos, it's pronounced azumos. It's unfermented, free from leaven or yeast, of the unleavened loaves used in the Paschal feast of the Jews. It says, metaphor, free from faults or the leaven of iniquity. You see, he was telling them to prepare unleavened bread to be eaten with the lamb according to the Torah commandment. Now, some people would rationalize that when he broke the bread with his disciples and ate it, that this was leavened bread. But let's look at the word used in Mark 14:22. Okay, let's look at the word. Mark 14:22 says, "And as they did eat, Yahushua took bread and blessed and broke it and gave to them and said, take, eat, this is my body." What is the Greek word used here for bread? Well, it's number 740 in the Greek concordance, Strong's concordance. It's artos. Let's see what artos is. It says, "Food composed of flour mixed with water and baked. The Israelites made it in the form of an oblong or round cake as thick as one's thumb and as large as a plate or platter. Hence, it was not to be cut but broken. Loaves were consecrated to the Lord of the bread used at the love feasts and at the Lord's table, food of any kind." See, this word artos is not saying that this is leavened bread. People are assuming that artos is leavened bread. It says nothing of the sort. It just is a word, a generic word, to describe food. You see, there's nothing that indicates that this was leavened bread. Nothing. The Greek word artos is a generic word used for any kind of bread, whether leavened or unleavened. But we already know it was unleavened bread because he already commanded them to make ready the Passover on the first of unleavened bread. And so if you put these two Greek words together, artos and azumos, you get the term unleavened bread. The word azumos simply means unleavened, and it does not include the word bread with it. It can mean anything that is unleavened or unfermented, even wine. And so the word artos is just the Greek word for bread, just like our English word for bread in general. If I use the word bread in a sentence in English, everyone knows I mean bread with leaven in it, yeast. But now, if I tell you that I'm keeping the Passover, and I tell you that I ate bread, you are going to know that what I ate was no ordinary bread. You are going to know that I ate unleavened bread. But most importantly, if he was using leavened bread as a metaphor for his body, that means that he would have been a sinner. You see, leaven is a picture of sin, and therefore his sacrifice had to be represented by a sinless, spotless lamb and bread with no leaven in it. Now, another very important factor to take into consideration is that the word day in this passage, Matthew 26:17, the word day is in italics, okay? And so let's read it again. "Now the first day of the feast of unleavened bread, the disciples came to Yahushua, saying unto him, where will you that we prepare for you to eat the Passover?" This means that these words were not in the original text. Therefore, the verse should read like this. "Now the first of unleavened bread, the disciples came to Yahushua, saying unto him, where will you that we prepare for you to eat the Passover?" You see, the fact that this was not the feast of, okay, it was not the feast of unleavened bread, but merely the first of the days of unleavened bread is extremely important. The Torah tells us to begin eating unleavened bread on the 14th day of the month Abib, according to Exodus 12:18. And so that is why in Matthew 26:17, Yahushua is telling us that this was the first of these days of unleavened bread. It would not commence the actual feast of unleavened bread until the following night on the 15th of Abib. The English translators took the liberty of adding these words into the text of Matthew 26:17, but because they had no gauge for keeping the feasts of Yahuwah, they confused the readers, making it appear that this was actually the 15th, the month of Abib, but it was only the 14th day of the month of Abib, and the Torah tells us to begin eating unleavened bread on the first of those days of unleavened bread. Some people argue that the phrase "first of unleavened bread" in Matthew 26:17 should say the day before unleavened bread, but this is not necessarily true. Let's see the word for first in Greek. Strong's number 4413 for the word first in Matthew 26:17 is protos. Protos says first in time or place, in any succession of things or persons, first in rank, influence, honor, chief, principle, first, at the first, foremost, in time, place, order, or importance, before, beginning, best, chiefest, first of all, former. Now, as you can see, the primary application of the word protos means, most often means first. And only in rare cases could it mean before. But the dead giveaway that Matthew 26:17 says first and not before in this instance is evidenced by the fact that later on in the chapter, Messiah was telling his disciples to go and prepare the Passover and that he was going to eat the Passover with them, okay? So if he commanded them to go and prepare the Passover, and he told them he was going to eat it with them, and this was before Passover, how then could he eat the Passover before Passover? This makes no sense, does it? The entire context of chapter 26 of Matthew tells us that this was the first of the days of unleavened bread, which included the day of preparation called Passover. Now, even if the word protos is indeed being translated as before unleavened bread in Mark 26:17, it does not change a thing. As a matter of fact, it helps our case even more, for the fact still remains that this was the beginning of the 14th of Abib, just as the 13th of Abib had ended, and the disciples had just asked our Messiah, Yahushua, this question, if I may paraphrase, where do you want us to go and prepare the Passover for you so that you may eat it? Now, this was the perfect opportunity for him to reply back to his disciples with a response that goes something like this. Hey guys, sorry, but I won't be able to keep the Passover with you tomorrow night because I'm going to be hanging on a tree this time tomorrow. But no, he did not say this to them. In Luke 22:8, listen to what it says. It says, he sent Kepha, or Peter, and Yehuchanan, or John, saying, go and prepare us the Passover that we may eat. Now, pay attention. What was he saying? Was he lying? Why would he say to them, go and prepare us the Passover that we may eat? If he wasn't eating it, why would he say, prepare the Passover for us so that we, including himself, may eat it? Was he playing games with them? Was he only pretending that he was going to eat the Passover with them? And then at the last minute, he was going to break the news to them and say this to them, look, guys, I cannot eat the Passover with you this year. You see, in the King James Version, italicized words denote that the words were not there originally. In Matthew 26:17, this was not during the daytime, neither was it the 15th day of Abib, the Feast of Unleavened Bread. This was the first of the days of unleavened bread. The Israelites had a custom of calling all 8 days inclusive between the 14th and the 21st of Abib the days of unleavened bread, even though on the 15th of Abib commences the Feast of Unleavened Bread. But here in Matthew 26:17, this was the beginning of those days of unleavened bread, even though the actual Feast of Unleavened Bread does not begin until the 15th of Abib. There is actually a commandment in the Torah to begin eating unleavened bread on the 14th of Abib. Now, let's read it. It's in Shemot or Exodus 12:18. It says, in the first month, on the 14th day of the month, at evening, you shall eat unleavened bread until the 1 and 20th day of the month at evening. Now, the word month is italicized here, so it should read, in the first, on the 14th day of the month at evening, you shall eat unleavened bread until the 1 and 20th day of the month at evening. So we begin eating unleavened bread on the 14th day of the month of Abib. Even though the 15th of Abib is called the Feast of Unleavened Bread, we begin eating unleavened bread between the two evenings on the 14th. Now, why does the 15th commence the Feast of Unleavened Bread? It is because on the first night of the 14th of Abib, lamb is to be eaten with unleavened bread. But there will be a total of 7 days that we eat unleavened bread following that first night on the 14th. Okay, so let's count how many days we eat unleavened bread. Day number one, the 14th of Abib. Day number two, the 15th of Abib. Day number three, the 16th of Abib. Day number four, the 17th of Abib. Day number five, the 18th of Abib. Day number 6, the 19th of Abib. Day number 7, the 20th of Abib. And day number 8, the 21st of Abib. Okay, so you see, we begin eating unleavened bread on the 14th of Abib. But we also have an additional 7 days where we eat no leaven, and we eat unleavened bread beginning on the 15th of Abib, which is called the Feast of Unleavened Bread. By the 21st of Abib at sundown, that is when we cease to eat unleavened bread. Therefore, if our Messiah ate the unleavened bread on the first night of the 14th of Abib, just after the sun went down on the 13th of Abib, this means that he also ate the Passover lamb with it. The night before he was crucified began the 14th of Abib, and he was not violating Torah, as some people might suppose. So long as he and his disciples killed the lamb at evening, or in other words, Ben Ha'areb, between the two evenings, they were still within the parameters of keeping the Passover according to the Torah. Some people seem to think that the lambs were only slaughtered on the evening of the 14th, just before the date was about to change to the 15th of Abib. But, beloved, there were thousands of people making pilgrimage at this time in the year 30, the Common Era, 30 AD, to have their lambs killed in the temple. It would be absurd to think that thousands of lambs could be slaughtered within just a few hours between 12 noon and 3 p.m. Okay, so let's just cover this other issue. Did Messiah and his disciples leave the house? Okay, a lot of people think, how could this be possible when we're commanded not to leave the house on the night following the slaughtering of the lamb? Okay, those who purport that Messiah did not eat the Passover lamb the night before he died will often use this passage in Exodus 12:22 to make the point that Yahushua and his disciples left the upper room that night to go to the Garden of Gethsemane to pray. Now, I'm not going to have time to cover this objection tonight. You'll have to wait till next week when we're going to cover this objection. For now, I'm just going to say this. Get the teaching. Go to my website, doubleportioninheritance.com. Download the teaching called Messiah Ate the Passover the Night Before He Died. If you want the flash drive that includes 60 ebooks, then just write to me at doubleportioninheritance@gmail.com. And for a minimum donation of $60 to this ministry, I will send you that flash drive. And included on the flash drive is this teaching called Messiah Ate the Passover the Night Before He Died. Okay, I will continue this study next week. In the meantime, shalom, shalom.
We hope you enjoyed today's broadcast and that you are encouraged in your walk with Messiah through the teaching. To visit Maria's website, visit doubleportioninheritance.com. That's www.doubleportioninheritance.com. This broadcast depends on the love gifts and offerings of listeners like you. To send a donation to Maria's ministry, write Double Portion Inheritance, Maria Merola, P.O. Box 7311, Fredericksburg, Virginia, 22404. Or you can donate with the PayPal button at doubleportioninheritance.com. For Maria and all the ministry team at Double Portion Inheritance, may God bless you.